2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
And welcome to the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson. Today, we are joined by Deseret, news reporter and former colleague of mine, and ours, I should
and
say,
mine.
Really, Kyle Dunphy. And he's joined today by Mohammed Tamim Solhadost. He is an recent immigrant from Afghanistan. Thank you both for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
And so, Kyle, tell us kind of how you got involved in creating this piece of journalism that has led you to meet Tamim and be able to tell his story.
Yeah, so I've been covering the refugee crisis in Afghanistan kind of from the perspective of Utah. Utah originally was slated to get 765 refugees from Afghanistan. That number has actually been bumped up to 865. And so since September, the first week of September, these refugees, and I should be clear, they actually aren't technically refugees. Most of them are special immigrant visa holders or humanitarian parolees are the two main kind of classification.
Humanitarian parolee, what the heck is
yeah,
that?
And that's and everyone I talk to.
It's not what you think it is.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, it sounds like a really bad word, right? Yeah,
parolee in America, not the term you want to be using.
Yeah, and it's actually so. The situation in Afghanistan, there's been a lot of humanitarian parolees because the situation was really chaotic, and the humanitarian parolee process is basically meant to buy you some time living in the U.S. while you apply for a visa. So it's sort of just like a first step in the visa process. And for a lot of these people that were coming through the gate at the airport, you know, they maybe didn't have time to get their visa in order, so they were rushed through the gate, and it's basically, you know, you're given this humanitarian parolee process and then you can complete the visa process later. So those are the two main kind of classifications that are coming over right now, special immigrant visa holders or humanitarian parolees. So they started to trickle in September, and since then I've kind of just been following some families around. Tamim and I met at a event at the Utah Islamic Center in West Jordan. And I was just sort of there being an annoying journalist and walking around talking to people. And sure enough, Tamim and I started talking, and turns out he has a pretty incredible story, and hopefully he can share it today.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Tamim, first of all, thank you again for joining us. How old are you? You mind me asking?
I'm 23 years old.
Okay. Again, I'm going to ask you to give me your outside voice.
Yeah. It's, gotta talk loud.
Yeah.
Talk
I recognize
an
why, but yeah.
Okay. Bring it, channel your inner American okay. here. Yeah.
So, okay, talk about your life growing up, in Afghanistan.
In Afghanistan, in my experience, living in Afghanistan means living in the hell. I have no fond memories of Afghanistan. The people of Afghanistan have always been in sorrow. Explosions, murders, thieves, insecurity happen every day in Afghanistan. You do not know what will happen when you leave home. If one day there was no explosion, on that day the fear of exploding would upset my mental state. It's mean we were upset in any time. I felt like I was going to die. It was going to explode. If you want to find hopeless people, go Afghanistan.
And part of your fear, according to Kyle, I know it's profound, right?
Wow.
Yeah.
I did not expect that.
And he wrote this last night, trying to get some thoughts together for this interview, which I really appreciate, because I think people need to understand sort of what the situation you're coming from was like, and then what the process has been like for you to come here. But in Kyle's story, he talked about sort of, you were so good. You had this, you grew up wanting to be a soccer star. Like a lot of kids, you had a sports dream, right? Like, and that led to you having some success. You were really good and you got featured and you could do some tricks on TV, and you got pictured with high ranking US officials, and that made you a target. Just that simple thing, right?
Yeah. And I seen the different things during the life and in Afghanistan and in here. It's like the different is that in the United States, children go to the kindergarten in a peaceful environment, but in Afghanistan, most of the children are forced to work and have to support their family financially in unsafe environment.
What does a child do for work?
Cleaning car, selling plastic, and okay. on the street, and cleaning the shoes of the people, yeah. And they have to support their family because their family need financially help, and they can't go to the school to study. This is Afghanistan life, mm-hmm. But in here. When I came in here, it's mean when you come from the darkness to the brightness place. I was in the darkness place for 23 years old. For 23 years, I was in the darkness. But after 23 years, I find brightness.
What was... you're working to help support your family, doing what you can, but you're also playing soccer.
Yeah, playing soccer... Soccer is my life. And,
you are already American with that
yeah,
statement.
Yeah, that is so true. That is so true.
But in Afghanistan, you face it with disappointed because no one support you in Afghanistan. The conditional in Afghanistan were not favorable for me to continue playing soccer. Like you need support. You have to pay for your transportation, for anything. You have to support your family also as well. But I did my best to reach my goals in a state of despair. I have been playing soccer for 14 years. I face it with huge problems in my life, which these problems keep me away from improvement, mm-hmm. to keep more practicing soccer. But I have been underestimating these problems, and I have been struggling with them, and I will do because my interest is so much with soccer. My big objective in soccer world is to be best player in the world. But I live 23 years in darkness. So it's mean I am older right now, 23. But I hope to support. I hope to someone support me in here, because age is not important. Age is a number. And in my first team in Afghanistan that I play soccer, it's Kabura Football Club teams. We had one of the best coach. His name is Tamim Kabura. Hope he is fine in this situation in Afghanistan.
He's still there.
He is in Afghanistan. And he was the best coach that I ever seen in my life in Afghanistan. In Afghanistan, in my experience, when we play soccer, we walk it for away places and we walk it far away places in unsafe condition to our training or playing soccer. We did not have a suitable field for playing soccer on that time. We used our transportation money for the soccer field, and we get our transportation money for the owner of soccer field to playing soccer one day in the best soccer field in Afghanistan.
So... We only got a couple of minutes, but I got a million questions. So here, since you've been here, are you playing soccer already?
Until now, I trying to play soccer. I doing my workout, workout training every day. But I just need support to someone that one of men in here, his name is Adam Miles. He wants to support me in here. He already support me a lot. A lot of support me. He introduced me for a team last week for Salt Lake Community College team, and they are told me in January we will test you because of the weather problem. In January we will test you, so you you have to be ready on that time.
Well, you're used to snow living in Afghanistan, but I will tell you it'll be a weird experience trying to do this. We have to take a break here. When we come back, we'll continue to learn more about your story. God bless America. That's all I got. We'll be right back.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on kslpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Jason Lee, Amy Donaldson, the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. Today joined by Deseret News reporter Kyle Dunphy and Afghan immigrant Mohammed Tamim Solados, who has a fascinating story. First of all, I'm going to let Amy start asking questions, but you've only been here a couple of months.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think 2 months and 15 days.
Yeah, we talked earlier. He's counting the days. So yeah. 2 months and 15 days and newly minted.
Over the rest of your life, that's
yeah.
right.
Yeah. So I found out about Tamim and some other Afghan refugees, and also just the issues that they're facing and what sort of how Utah is processing them from a series of articles that Kyle is writing, which I recommend everyone follow him on Twitter. He tweets these out. I've been trying to retweet him when I see them. But Kyle, would you just give us some idea of like when refugees started arriving and sort of where we are in the process of welcoming people to Utah?
Yeah. So the first refugee or person evacuated from Kabul arrived in Utah. I believe it was the first week of September. And since then, they've kind of been trickling in. And it's a really slow process. I'm sure Tamim can kind of tell you about the headaches and just sort of the flurry of red tape that these people need to go through. As of today, the state's still supposed to get about 300 more refugees, but they're stuck right now kind of in limbo on military bases, some in the U.S. and some internationally. But as they are trickling in, as they're, being vetted, as their applications are being processed, they're funneling into Utah. And there's obviously a lot of needs. I don't even know where to start, and I'm sure Tamim can give us a better idea of sort of the needs of this community. But everything from, trying to get a driver's license to getting work authorization to trying to, get your visa approved, to enrolling in school. There's a lot of professionals that are coming over right now that worked as contractors, worked alongside U.S. military. And so there's a lot of people that have experience, in the trades that maybe their certifications can't transfer over to the U.S. There's a lot of students that are trying to get their college credits transferred. And so there's just like a mountain of things that these people are having to deal with. And the state is helping. We have two resettlement agencies here in Salt Lake City, the International Rescue Committee and Catholic Community Services. And they're right now being helped by the Afghan Community Fund, which is an initiative from from the state to sort of, give these resettlement agencies a little more financial support. But yeah, like I said, there's just so much, so much overhead for this community right now. There are some unique aspects to this situation compared to other humanitarian crises before. You know, the time in which these people came. Mm-hmm. You know, it's pretty incredible that, you know, a couple months ago, my friend Tamim here was in Afghanistan, whereas, you know, a lot of refugees living in the U.S. right now, some were born on refugee camps, some spent mm-hmm. years on refugee camps. So these people were really just shot out of shot out of a cannon right into Utah. And so that's a unique aspect, and really that the speed in which this process happened has created a lot of backlog. That's why, you know, Tamim getting work authorization has been really hard for people like him, because there's thousands of people trying to get sure. work authorization. And I'm sure he can talk a little more about sort of just the mountain of like I said, red tape that you have to go through.
I was going
to
say, welcome to America, where we do sports well, but we also do red tape really well.
So. Thank you so much.
You're in the light, and now you can see all the red tape. No, I mean, so just tell us a little bit about what it was like before you left Kabul, and then what kinds of problems or issues have you had? Like, do you want to work? Do you want to go to school? How has it been going?
Firstly, in Afghanistan, when I was in Afghanistan, I faced it with a lots of problems. It's like, I have to support my family on that time, and I have to support myself studying lessons and go to university. In the daytime, I was work in the Ministry of National Defense social media section, but after job, I was in the nighttime. I was go to university and study English literature department. A lot of people choose the economics, law, IT, computer science, like that. But when I was child, I really love English language. Because of that, I chose the English language literature in Kabul University. Mm-hmm. I was a student in Kabul University.
Very practical choice. No,
it's working out now.
He knows his audience.
your English is fantastic.
Thank you so much.
I'm so impressed. Yeah. But so what's it been like since you got here?
Do you want to share?
Yeah, I wonder, what it's like not knowing where. You don't get to pick where you live, right?
Okay,
so, what was that like to not know? Like, where am I?
So, when you left Afghanistan, you didn't know where you didn't know you were going to end up here, did you?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you did
know. It's all like a dream. It's all like a dream. When you sleep and when you wake up and you see the American flag.
So did you know you were coming to Utah, or did you just know you were coming to the United States?
I just know that too. I did not know about that. I just left Afghanistan in a bad situation that U.S. Army helped our family and helped us to come in here. And I am so glad, and I am very thankful from the U.S. government.
Was that scary to try to figure out who they were?
If you want, I can share the story. Sure. In the first day when Afghanistan faced it with bad situation, our bad president left Afghanistan and left mm-hmm. people. And
is it Karzai?
Yeah, Ashraf Ghani.
Okay,
Ashraf Ghani. We don't think about that. That a lot of people talking about that Afghanistan will Taliban will come inside of the capital province, but we don't believe that, because we believe in our army, we believe in our soldier. Honestly, and if after one night when that situation happened, when I woke up in the morning. I seen this street, no one on this street, no Afghan army, no police, no anything, no government, just like animal people come on this street with white flag, human like animal. And I shock it in my sleep.
Right, you think this is a nightmare?
This is a dream, and it's not possible.
And we should say that that white flag, that's the flag that the Taliban flies.
The Taliban flag.
We looked out and saw the Taliban.
So they use a surrender flag for their own flag.
It's not, it has
some stuff on it. Okay, all right.
Yeah. It's just really
so then you know that the Taliban has taken position in your city.
In my city, yes. Yeah. And after that, I felt that our life is in the danger.
Mm-hmm. Because and, you work for the Defense Department.
Also, I work, and also one of my brother, he was work at U.S. military and mm-hmm. U.S. Marine, like for a translator mm-hmm. and at U.S. Embassy. And you know, when Taliban get inside of the Kabul city, they have any paper, they have any list. Because of that, we left fastly our home.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And my brother called me, go fastly to the airport. When I saw the news on Facebook mm-hmm. and social media, I saw that last night lots of people transport from the U.S. Air Force to Qatar, and honestly, on that time. I moved to the Kabul airport without my family to check the door. On the road, people, they are walking in front of the gate. And all the roads is locked. And when I seen in front of the door, a machine gun, Taliban, and
oh, wow.
They are... like animal, their reaction, and they are killed also people on that day. And I know that the U.S. military inside of the airport. I try to go to near of the U.S. military to show for them our document.
So they can get out.
Yeah, but
I want to continue your story. I want to cut you off because I want to
take a break.
Take a break for a second. We will be back. We will have Tamim continue telling his story about how this treacherous trip to the Kabul airport, trying to get out and save his family. You're listening to Voices of Reason. We are back with the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason, Jason Lee, Amy Donaldson, speaking today with Kyle Dumphy, a reporter for the Deseret News, who is doing in-depth coverage on the Afghanistan. How do you even describe it, Kyle? I mean, is it the refugee situation or just the
it's kind of both, immigrants and refugees.
Right? Yeah, it's hard. The common term has been refugees, and that's it's not really a accurate use of the word. You know, refugees sort of that's a status that you're gained from the UN and the State Department. So it's I guess the best way to describe it, I guess, is just a crisis, immigration, humanitarian crisis. But yeah, right. You see the word refugee. We talk mm-hmm. about Utah's going to get, 850 refugees, and that's actually not entirely accurate. But yeah, that's how I would define the
And he
situation.
Is joined today by Afghan immigrant Mohammed Tamim Soledost. I'm getting that. That's not too bad, actually. I feel proud of myself. And you were telling me, Tamim, about how you were approaching the airport, and you can see the chaos that's already kind of developed, and with the Taliban having presence there, and you were trying to actually reach the U.S. military so that you can show that you had papers that allowed you at least to hopefully get some help in making the transition, getting out of Afghanistan and then coming over?
Yeah. On that time, when I tried to get inside of the airport from one gate of the Kabul airport, I want to go inside on that time. On that time, one Talib attacked with the knife in front of me, and I protect myself, and I ran away from him. And dead body, everything I seen on that mm-hmm. day. And when I came back to home, I told my family, go outside, come fastly. Our life is not safe.
So, because you were living, your family were in a refugee camp. at that time. Is that right or no? Mm.
They were living in a home, right?
Yeah, in your apartment.
Maybe I didn't understand what you said.
An apartment.
Leave quickly from where? From the apartment?
From the apartment.
Okay, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
From the apartment because, you know, when you live in somewhere, you are neighbor, everyone know you, everyone know where you work. You don't trust on anyone. Maybe someone's has a relationship with bad people.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they'll tell them, hey, these guys work with the U.S. government. Yeah. Go get them. Don't get me. Go get them. Yeah.
And also, on that time, when I was working Ministry of Defense, I meet with a lot of U.S. military and took a picture and get the certificates from the U.S. military. And I share that in social media. A lot of my friends also, Facebook friends also know about me. So
and people could curry favor with the Taliban by giving up somebody who
And we left my brother apply for us in parole, and they sent, he sent for us an email from the U.S. government, online visa, and they just wrote in the email, come in the Camp Sullivan door, and we will pick up you guys. But
the camp, it's a military camp, yes. Okay.
Yeah, and the one of the gate of Kabul airport. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And when we move it on that place, a lot of people crowd, like 6,000 people, 7,000 people without documents. Because people are scared.
Yes.
People are scared. They are trying to get inside of the airport. We have document. They can't go in front. Because when you go on the crowd, you can't breathe. Importantly, with your family.
Right.
Women can't go inside of 6,000 people crowd. Mm-hmm. Everyone push you. Maybe you felt down.
Mm-hmm.
I also felt down.
So you've fallen down and now you've got people
down.
Trampling on you.
Yeah, trample. People walk it on my body. And
so were you feeling like we're never going to get out?
Yeah, I tried to get out, but on that time, I don't know how can I stand in my feet. It's all like, I don't want to remember a lot of things, but I share shortly my story.
Yeah.
And
how did you finally get to them to show them your documents?
Yeah, I will share that.
Yeah.
After that, we go in another gate of airports, all of gates, to the 30 August, we go around of the Kabul airport. We did not eat anything without cookies and water. Mm-hmm. Every day, every night, not sleeping. If you sometimes sleep only for 2 hours on the street.
This is 30 days you did this.
Yeah, and with my family. And we face it with bomb blasting on that time. And the people crowd on that gate, I don't remember the name of that gate that bomb blasting happened in front of the gate. People crowd a lot, and I told my family USD, and I will go near of the U.S. military, and I will show them the document and our online visa or a reference code that they are sent for us, reference code to show that for the U.S. military. When I move it on that time, I also record video on that time, and I share with my friend
Kyle.
Kyle, yeah. Mm-hmm. When I move it on that time, 100 or 150 meters away from me, I just hear a big voice like boom. I don't know what's happened. Just seen blood and run. And trying to found my family. But I'm so lucky. I don't know. I might say I'm lucky or no, because on that day, 100 people killed on that day.
Right, because you got bombs exploding all over the place and no protection.
I don't want to say that I am lucky, because our people are not safe in Afghanistan. Right. And after that, we are so disappointed. We were so disappointed on that time. My mom told me, like, we will never go to the airport again because of that situation. Because
the suicide bomber.
And I told him, I told her, we have to go. We don't have choice. And we move it again. We move it again. Move it again. To the 29 August. Like 29 August, we are so disappointed on that thing. We came back to home. We came back to home. Like, not our home, our relative home, because in our apartment, our life was danger, was in danger. And on that time, my brother connected, connected with one of the soldiers inside of the airport.
We got about a minute to go.
Yeah, and after that, they are called us to come on that street. The car will pick up you guys, and
bring you through the
bring
crowd.
You through the gate and bring you to the, through the U.S. For
yeah, because we should say after that, after the suicide bombing, they actually didn't process people. People should know that the airport was guarded by Taliban soldiers, not U.S. military. U.S. military was inside the airport.
Yeah.
They were not allowed to be outside the airport. It was a really
really hard
crazy
situation. So without U.S. help, we did on that time we can't go inside. We are so disappointed on that thing,
but your entire family got inside.
They are checked the list, they are checked the reference code, everything in front of the car. Also, they are checked the name, like what do you say for that?
Driver's license.
When you say the name of the pupil,
on the list. Are you on the list?
They are saw the list, and after that, we don't believe that we will go to the inside.
Yeah,
but
because you have no idea how would we get there.
In 8 o'clock at night, we get into the car, but in 3 o'clock in the night, the car moved and inside of the airport.
Wow.
And one of the translator from the U.S. military, they also again check the list, and they are
making sure,
double and triple checking.
Checking. Yeah. And after that, when I get inside of the airport, in the biometric place, when the U.S. military check the passports or any documents, again on that time alarm is on because it's that no one in the airport without 30 or 29 officers of U.S. military.
I got to cut you off a little bit because we can't go too long.
Yeah.
So when we come back, we'll have you finish it. And then I want to talk to Kyle a little bit about, you know, how you intend to cover this story going forward.
Yeah, and what people can do to support people like Tamim.
You are a courageous man. There's no two ways about that. You're listening to Voices of Reason. Jason Lee, Amy Donaldson, back with the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. And today, joined by Kyle Dunphy, a Deseret News reporter who is doing in-depth coverage on the Afghan crisis and those people who are immigrating from Afghanistan to Utah. And we're joined today by Mohammed Tamim Soledost, who is kind of talking to us about a rather harrowing experience trying to just make it to the airport in the most chaotic situation that you can only imagine, with thousands of people who are trying to flee to save their own lives, are kind of rushing a place that is literally being surrounded and protected by Taliban soldiers. And you were saying that you had gotten to a point now where you at least have gotten inside, and they are trying to make sure that you and your family and others who have trying to make this escape, that you are on the list essentially mm-hmm. to, you know, flee this situation.
Yeah. On that time, when we go inside of the airport, the U.S. military want to check our biometric place and they check our documents. On that time, the alarm is on, and every soldiers come ready for the fighting. And everyone, every soldiers told us, get down on the floor. And everyone on that time get it down on the floor.
But he's motioning. You can't see this because we're on a podcast. But hands on the head.
Hands on the head. Mm-hmm. And we felt that the Taliban is coming inside and the fight is starting. We think that we will die. Mm-hmm. We will killed by Taliban and the fight will starting. But after 15 minutes, alarm is off and every soldiers told us come again on the position for biometric mm-hmm. or for checking documents. And after that,
Can I ask you who's with you? So your brother is with you, and who else? Your mom?
My mom and my sisters and her husband, her kids.
Okay, so there's like how many of you do you think?
Like 10.
10 of you? Yeah.
Yeah, 10 of us come inside of the airport and.
Boy, that would be scary. I mean, the kids. How old are the kids?
Like the kids, 4 years, 7 years.
Hopefully they'll forget. I can't imagine going through that as a kid. Like at least you as an adult have some ability to say like, oh, this is wartime. They don't really have any other.
Yeah, but when we move it fastly to the airplane, only two airplanes in the airport. The one is for U.S. military and the second is for the Afghan people. Mm. No one in the airport. I am the last person to left Afghanistan on that time. The last one.
To get on the plane?
Yeah, last one.
What does that feel like to be in the air?
When we go inside of the airplane, Air Force airplane, I'm also worried about that maybe Taliban fire rocket on the airplane.
So there's no relief.
No, yeah.
But, do you have relief now?
Yeah. And after that, when the airplane go up, and I like a big breathing.
a sigh of relief.
Just sleep.
Oh, that's how you sleep on an airplane. Just have your life in jeopardy for 30 days. Kyle, you've been covering other stories. I'm just wondering what this has been like for you to sort of tell these stories, and what you want people. What have you learned? Like, what do you want people to understand about people who are having this experience?
Yeah. So it, you know, Tamim is. I covered Tamim's story as one of several profiles I did on people that have come here from Afghanistan. And it kind of just that series sort of just evolved. It was originally going to be like a series of vignettes that I realized that I couldn't tell Tamim's story and a lot of other people in 500 words, mm-hmm. right? I mean, like if I don't think a novelist could really do it justice, to be honest with you. It's kind of just evolved as I've been spending time with Tamim and other families from Afghanistan. I wrote a series of three profiles on their experience. And it's just been really grateful that, you know, people like Tamim and others have kind of opened up their homes and allowed me to kind of share their story, because it's really, obviously really hard story to tell. Mm-hmm. As far as, you know, it's great to see, you know, so we had a editorial board meeting with our governor, Spencer Cox, yesterday, and he said, you know, everyone saw those chaotic images from the airport. And some of the people you see in those images are living in Utah right now. And that's kind of what I'm trying to do here, because I think everyone like saw the pictures and the videos coming out of Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. Like I think everyone, like the whole world saw those mm-hmm. images. But I don't know how many people like really slowed down and tried to learn more about like who the people they were seeing in these videos, you know, whether like they had anything to eat that morning, like Tamim did, whether they had literally been on their feet for 72 hours.
I was just thinking about like, where are you going to the bathroom?
Yeah.
I mean, like, if you're in this situation, think about this. I mean, this is real. This is life and death stuff. And these folks are just, they don't even have the bare minimum to get by, but yet somehow they need to survive lest, you know, they fall prey to whatever, you know, dictatorial things come down from the Taliban. I mean, it's just an impossible situation.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know I'm one of like many journalists who really tried to kind of slow down and sort of tell, you know, look kind of more in depth at the situation and kind of look at the human side of the people trying to get into the airport. You know, that's, I saw so much good reporting kind of come from the last two, and it's,
but I think it's critical because it's not just like, it doesn't just give you perspective on what happened there. I think it's really important to understand this moment. We spent 20 years at war in Afghanistan.
20 years.
And I think that it's important to understand what that does to a society and generations of Afghanis. Mm. And now Americans, soon to be maybe Afghan Americans,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I think that it's not – what I've really loved about the reporting is not just – like hearing these stories and feeling grateful that I grew up going to kindergarten, you know what I mean, in America, I really feel like a responsibility and a connection to Afghanis in a way that I didn't before this kind of reporting.
Mm-hmm. And I think like that sentiment is shared among a lot of people in Utah. Mm-hmm. Utah has a long history of kind of opening their doors to refugees. I mean, like that's a huge cultural aspect of the state, right? I mean, the Mormon pioneers, they were refugees.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if you look at, there's obviously some kind of anti-refugee sentiment.
1 minute.
But by and large in Utah and kind of across the country, it's really hard to find polling that shows people don't support letting people into the country.
Especially when they know the story, right?
Especially like when they know the story, yeah.
What was the governor saying people could do to help? Like, we don't have that much time left.
Sure,
what,
yeah. So there's the Afghan Community Fund. So far, they've raised about $1.1 million in donations. A lot of those donations are from companies, but they're from individuals as well. The big thing people can do if they're looking to help is they can donate money, but the funds are pretty deep, and they are lacking on volunteers, and they're lacking in housing. So
where do you go to, you know, find out about this?
So you can go to the IRCU's website or Catholic Community Services. That's International Rescue Committee or Catholic Community Services. Their website, you can volunteer. They're really looking for long-term volunteers, caseworkers. You know, everyone wants to show up for a day and do, you know, hand out food or whatever, but they're really looking for people who can make kind of more of a long-term commitment. And then any landlords, any property owners, people that have housing available, you know, everyone in the state is struggling to find housing right now. Not, mm-hmm. you know, so when you're a refugee that doesn't have necessarily the credit history or the employment history that landlords look for.
Or that's even permission to work.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So that's another big element to it right now. So housing and volunteers, and then, you know, obviously money, to these organizations that they'll always be accepting. But there has been an outpouring of financial support to these organizations and to the community fund.
Well, I hope to have you back so that you can tell us after your Salt Lake Community College trip, and hopefully we'll be talking about how we can see you play soccer somewhere, right? That's my hope for you.
Thank you.
And
so
thank
much.
You so much for doing this. And Kyle, yeah. Thanks for your work.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
the best to you. Seriously. Yeah,
thank you so much. And I had an experience also during the arrivation that when I moved from the Germany to in here, traveling mm-hmm. and all time, I sleep. And after when I woke up, the airplane door was open and I seen the American flag. This is the best. That was the best feeling that I that. And after that, during the arrivation, I faced because of that situation, I faced with dehydrating, and every soldiers, U.S. soldiers, and during the arrivation there, helped me and
give you an IV. And,
yeah.
Oh,
and,
right.
And
yeah, dehydration is real.
Yeah. And also, when I seen the U.S. military, I seen the humanity first time, because they are very worried about all of Afghan, all of people. They care daytime, nighttime, and any weather, cold, warm, they stand for helping people. And we are very thankful. When I came in here, I seen the mountains. Beautiful mountains.
That's our best friend.
Okay.
We'll get him skiing this winter.
Beautiful mountains and beautiful people, respectful people, peace, love, everything. Well. Just, it's sometimes I felt I'm in a dream or no.
Well,
yeah,
that's the American dream, right?
Yeah.
Welcome to America.
Thank you so much.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Sorry. And I want to say that we are human. It's not important where we are from. We are from Asian. We are a country. We are from European country. We are from USA. We are all human. We need help. Each other help. We need to support each other. We need to support each other. And if we feel pain in our one finger, mm-hmm. we feel pain in our body. It means a parts of the world right now feel pain, like Afghanistan. It means all the world feel pain about that. Because our people are hungry right now. They don't have food. They are trying to sleep forget the hungry moment, and they don't have hope right now, and they need support. So hopefully, USA every time support our people. Hopefully, in future also, U.S. government hopefully support our people. Help our people right now is very important.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Join us again for the next episode of the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. If you have any comments about the show, please contact us via email at vormed@gmail.com or at vorjasonl@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at @ADONSports and at @JasonLee1. Our show's Twitter handle is @VORPodcast. Check out our Facebook page, and you can also find and subscribe to free episodes of our podcast in all the places where you find interesting content. Be sure to review our show as well. We'd love to get your feedback, and it helps us grow our audience. Until next time, along with Amy Donaldson, I'm Jason Lee. When you engage in passionate debate, do your best to keep your dialogue civil. Try to be the voice of reason.
Voices of Reason is a production of the Loudmouth Project.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.